Online Academy, where our topic will be Federal Facilities 5-Year Review. Our session has been sponsored by the EPA's Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office. We'll be joined by several instructors today. First, we'll turn it over to Emmy Laiha in just a minute from EPA's Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office. Later, we'll be joined by Monica McGeady, as well as Jen Edwards and Laura Bulow. Each of our speakers will provide a little bit of background about themselves before they jump into their portions of our class. So just in the interest of time, I think we're going to jump right into our seminar overview with Emmy, just to provide a quick refresher for everybody about this ongoing series. So, Emmy, I'm going to call up some new presentation slides and then turn it over to you.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Jean. While those slides are loading on everyone's portals, I just want to take a second to talk about the Federal Facilities Academy. So this webinar on Federal Facility 5-Year Reviews is part of a larger academy that's really focused on supplementing EPA's other trainings related to Superfund cleanups. So this is a voluntary program. It was developed with EPA RPMs, project managers from other federal agencies, state government, and tribal groups in mind, and because we're all groups that work on federal facility Superfund cleanups. So the academy itself is made up of 12 courses total, 11 of which are webinars. And as you can see from the course scheduled, we're in our second to last webinar for this first year or so of offerings. And then our next one will be on military munitions on September 14th. September 14th. So again, entirely voluntary, but trying to really focus in on those federal facility topics that might not get as much attention in our larger EPA trainings. So thank you so much for participating in today's webinar. We also have one in-person course, that's the 12th course, that we are waiting to get rescheduled depending on when it's safe to do so. We'll, as soon as we have dates and locations, we'll be sure to post that on our TrainX website for registration. But say you're looking at this list of courses, you're like, oh man, I really would have liked to have taken the community involvement course or any of the others listed. All of these webinars are archived and you can view them at your own convenience and receive credit for doing so. For those people who finish all 12 courses, FFRO is going to be issuing certificates of completion for completing the academy. And if you have any questions on that, please feel free to contact me again. I'm Emmy Laiha and I send me a quick email or call me. I'd be happy to help with any questions you may have. So as far as credit goes, I'm going to hand it back to Jean to give us the details on how that happened.
Thanks so much, Emmy. All right, so as Emmy noted, this is a multi-part webinar series. They've been open to the public, and all of our online webinars have been available to watch live as well as to replay on demand. So for those online webinars, you can either attend them live, like you're all doing right now, or you can watch the previously recorded versions. For that in-person classroom training opportunity, if and when that course is hosted, and we can revisit this concept later on, that will be open to a limited audience of in-person participants, specifically EPA, states, tribes, and other federal agencies. For the courses that we have been able to host online as webinars, for each and every class, you can receive an individual participation certificate. But in order to get one of those, you need to submit an online feedback form for the course. So whether you're attending it live or you replayed the recorded version, you need to follow the links that are available on the far right of each webinar to the seminar feedback form. When you click that link, fill out the feedback form, you will then immediately have access to a seminar certificate that you can print out for your own records. And this is true if you were there live or you fill out the feedback based off of your online replay. If you're able to provide a certificate for all 11 seminars and also able to take that in-person classroom training, you'll then receive an Academy certificate reflecting that you did both portions of the training. But again, that's only if you're able to do both the classroom training and all of the online webinars. All right, Emmy. I think with that, we'll go ahead and call up the presentation materials to begin with the class.
Thank you so much, Jean. So while that's coming up, just really quickly again, I'm Emmy Laiha in EPA's FFRO office. And I've been in the Federal Facilities Cleanup Program for 11 years. So very excited to be here, along with all the other instructors, to talk more about Federal Facilities 5-year reviews. We do get quite a bit of questions about how these should be done and what's the process, how is headquarters involved. So we're looking forward to talking on all of these questions with you in more detail. But before we jump into the content of today's course, we'd like to better understand who's joining us today. So we're going to start off with a group poll. And Jean will pull up the boxes, I guess, on your screen for you to be able to participate in this group poll. But really, we'd like to know, what experience have you had with 5-year reviews at federal facility Superfund sites? So Jean, would you talk them through how to provide their input?
Absolutely. In the lower left of your screen, you'll now see a window where you can enter what experiences you have had. You can click on the empty box at the bottom and type your answer in. As you type your answer in, it'll appear in the box above, but this is a special window. You can actually agree with or vote for other responses if you've shared that experience. So as you see responses come in, hover your cursor over a response that you agree with, and you'll see a plus one appear to the right. As you click that plus one, you'll sort of cast your vote or agree with it, and then you'll be able to see the most common or popular responses automatically appear at the top. So we're able to sort of crowdsource a sense of the experiences you've had. And Emmy, I'm seeing a number of responses in here, and surprisingly for me, it seems like the number one experience is that they have no experience with 5-year reviews at federal facilities on sites.
Yeah, I'm seeing that too, and that's fine. That's okay. These webinars offer a lot of great information, even if you're new. So we also will be pointing out guidance documents and other links that are hyperlinked in the participant manual. So if you haven't had a chance to download the slides yet, I really suggest you do so, because there might be things you want to go back to. So if you've had no or very little limited experience with federal facility 5-year reviews, this is a great way to get your feet wet, but we will give you information on additional resources that are really going to help you get more comfortable with this process. So I see none unlimited were the biggest responses. Some are doing their very first one, so good that you're here getting more information. It looks like we also have some people who have quite a bit of experience who have reviewed a number of 5-year reviews. So hopefully everyone will find something that's helpful for them, and we'll be able to address any questions you have as we go along. But thank you so much to everybody who participated in that group poll. It just gives us an opportunity to know who we're chatting with and allows us to better tailor what we share with you all. So thanks again.
Just one quick clarification, just doing my representation for some of our other attendees. For those of you that are on mobile devices, some of you may find it hard to respond to those polls just given the way your screen lays out. So if for any reason you're unable to reply to those activity windows, you're always able to open the Q&A window and share your responses there. Thanks, Emmy.
No, thank you, Jean. Thank you for reminding people how they can participate. So getting to the actual content for today's webinar, on our agenda, we're going to start by looking at the purpose and regulatory context for 5-year reviews, how to review a 5-year review. I think that might have a lot of questions. Associated community involvement, then we'll get into more details on protected statements, independent findings, and we'll have a case study from Laura Bulow, who is an RPM remedial project manager in Region 10 for EPA. And lastly, we'll touch on how emerging contaminants are addressed in 5-year reviews. So getting right into it, I'm going to hand over the floor to Jen Edwards to get us started. Jen?
Hello. Thanks, Emmy. So I'll do a brief introduction. I'm Jen Edwards. I work at EPA in the Office of Superfund Remediation Technology Innovation. I've worked there for 11 years in construction and post-construction management. And one of my main things I work on is 5-year reviews, coordinating the non-federal facility 5-year reviews, working with my counterparts in the federal facilities restoration and reuse office, kind of on the national picture of 5-year reviews.
After a
sorry. Okay, so to start us off, where do five-year reviews come from? So five-year reviews are referenced in CERCLA and the NCP. CERCLA, sorry guys, as everyone, I have children in the background. CERCLA 121 states that if the president selects a remedial action that results in any hazardous substances, pollutants, or contaminants remaining at the site, the president shall review such remedial action no less often than each 5 years after the initiation of the remedial action. So the important point there is that CERCLA 121, this was through the SARA, the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act, included five-year reviews on remedial action. The NCP took it further and discussed, you know, when you would do a five-year review. So if remedial action is selected that leaves waste in place above levels that allow for unlimited use and unrestricted exposure, sometimes you'll hear that referred to, especially by folks that work on it a lot, as UUUE, then the lead agency shall review such action no less often than every 5 years after the initiation of the selected remedial action. So again, five-year reviews, no less often than every 5 years, included in CERCLA and expanded a bit in the NCP. All right, so the next piece. So why are we doing five-year reviews? So the purpose of a five-year review is to determine whether the remedy at a site is or upon completion will be protective of human health and the environment. So it is a way to look at what's been implemented and try to ensure that it is protective of human health and the environment, which is the goal of what we're doing here under CERCLA. So a couple of things to keep in mind when you're doing five-year reviews. If there are any issues that impact protectiveness, you will see follow-up actions identified and recommendations to ensure that protectiveness is achieved. And that could be long-term protectiveness problems or more short-term protectiveness problems. So the five-year review includes three main technical questions. Those questions are, is the remedy functioning as intended by the decision documents? So with that question, we're going to want to, you know, determine what was the remedy selected in those decision documents and kind of what is the status of where it is right now. So is it functioning how it was meant to? So look at all those pieces and try to put that determination together. The next question you think about is, are the exposure assumptions, toxicity data, cleanup levels, and remedial action objectives, REOs, used at the time of the remedy still valid? So there are a lot of assumptions that go into records of decision when we are selecting a remedy. So this is asking us to think about those assumptions and ensure that they are still valid. And look for whether anything may have changed that could impact protectiveness. And then the third question I kind of think of as the catch-all question. So that one is, has any other information come to light that could call into question the protectiveness of the remedy? So is there anything that you would not have looked at or discussed under the first question, whether the remedy is functioning as intended, or under the second question about your exposure assumptions, toxicity, cleanup levels, and remedial action objectives, anything besides those things that could call into question protectiveness of the remedy. So those are kind of the big three technical questions that we're looking to answer in a five-year review to help us make our determination of whether the remedy is protective. Okay, and I believe I'm turning it over to Monica right now. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jen. Thanks a lot. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Monica McGeady. I'm an environmental engineer with the EPA. I've been the point of contact for EPA headquarters federal facilities on five-year reviews, and I've been working on federal facility sites for at least almost 20 years. So I want to welcome everyone to today's webinar And today, just our focus, as others have said, is on federal facility, five-year reviews, but particularly we're going to talk about, again, EPA's role at MPL federal facility sites. So the next slide talks about what the federal facility five-year review is, and it's really consistent with the Executive Order 12580 that basically says that the other federal agency is responsible for ensuring that the five-year reviews are conducted at the sites. And where they're required or appropriate for federal facility sites, the lead agency conducts the review, prepares the report, and submits the report to EPA for review and comment. And also the lead agency is responsible for ensuring that the recommendations and follow-up actions in the report are completed. During that time, again, for MPL sites, EPA has a role. EPA will either concur with the protectiveness determination made by the other federal agency, or EPA can make an independent finding of protectiveness. We're going to slide 8. So in 2001, EPA put out, actually it was August 2011, EPA put out what we call a program priority memo, which was really guidance for EPA RPMs on really how to ensure that the five-year reviews are completed by the statutory due date. And just some background, this was really in response to an EPA Inspector General report that was done in 2010. And that Inspector General report had about 8 to 9 recommendations. And one of those recommendations were related to the timeliness of federal facility five-year review reports. And so we in FIFRO put out this 2011 memo, and basically the memo provides guidance again to EPA RPMs. It talks about concurring or not on protectiveness determination of facility OUs by the statutory due date. It also talks about writing a concurrence or a non-concurrence letter to the other federal agency following the completion of the five-year review. We actually are tracking and updating the issues and recommendations affecting protectiveness. It identifies the next five-year review due date and generates due dates for all future five-year reviews based on the statutory review timeframe. So again, this 2011 memo was actually guidance to our RPMs to ensure that the five-year reviews are completed by the statutory due dates. So how do we review a federal facility five-year review? So before I talk about review, I just want to point out there are some differences between federal facility five-year reviews and what we call our private Superfund site five-year reviews. Again, as I mentioned before, the lead federal agency writes the report, and EPA's role is either to agree or issue an independent finding of protectiveness. EPA provides that information similar to the private site. We do what we call an annual report to Congress, and on an annual basis for each site where the five-year review was completed, we actually identify what the protectiveness determination was. And for federal facility sites, we also identify whether EPA had to make an independent finding of the protectiveness. And the reason why we had to make an independent finding of the protectiveness. Again, and once the report is completed, it's actually entered into SIMS. So just as a reminder, we do have a OSWIR 2001 comprehensive five-year review guidance that kind of can guide you through the five-year review process. We've issued several updates to that guidance, and all of that can be found on the EPA website under the Superfund program or the FedFact website. And we would encourage you to visit those websites. When you're starting the five-year review, it's important it's really very important that the lead federal agency project manager should contact either the state RPM or the EPA RPM or any technical specialist, sort of to kind of stay up to date on emerging contaminants, exposure pathways, state and federal standards. So there should be some check-in with the lead federal agency project manager to ensure that they have all of the updated information related to any standards on the EPA side and also on the state side. There should be a five-year review team, should identify, and within that team, they should be identifying any new changes, regulations that were considered applicable, relevant, the AROs, and seek agreement on whether they impact the remedial action objectives or the protect and the southern remedy. So, again, please take a look at the guidance to help you through the process. So the next slide talks about EPA's review and submission process. And this slide basically really talks about, you know, how this process actually starts. Again, the lead federal agency is responsible for submitting the draft report. And the lead federal agency, basically, the amount of review time that the EPA or the state have on that to review the five-year review is really based on the site's federal facility agreement. Generally, what happens is that the regulated agencies will have about 60 days to review and submit comments, and then another 45 to 60 days is generally allowed for the final review, depending, again, all of this depends on if there's anything specifically identified in the federal facility agreement. During this review time, the EPA RPM will also solicit comments from their technical, legal, and headquarters staff. The EPA RPM will consolidate those comments and send them to the lead federal agency. And again, this is a process that can go on maybe not the first draft, but the second draft, so it's a continuous process. Once all the comments are addressed, the document will be finalized by the lead federal agency and circulated among the lead agencies for signature. Again, depending on the signatory authority, again, identified in the FFA, EPA may need to sign the report or write a concurrence letter regarding the protectiveness determination. And in that concurrence letter, which is the last, in that concurrence letter that is actually written by EPA, EPA will either concur or non-concur on the protectiveness statement for each OU. And in that concurrence letter, we're also identifying any issues that we will be tracking in our SIMS database, and we will state the due date for the next review based on the actual statutory requirement of the five-year review. Again, they're due no less than every 5 years. So if the federal agency and EPA cannot agree on a protectiveness of the remedy, then EPA may issue, again, an independent assessment of the protectiveness of the remedy. And again, that independent assessment of the protectiveness of the remedy is written in a letter to the other federal agency. And sort of for more complex sites with multiple OUs, again, those signatures, if you have to sign off on those five-year reviews, it may take a long time. So beforehand, the group or the team should actually get together and develop a schedule for the completion of the five-year review and also agree on the timetables for each of the review timeframes. So the next slide talks about preparing for a five-year review. Again, it's really, really important that five-year review team members work together early and often to get real-time input while conducting a review and writing a report. So you, as part of EPA, state, and the other federal agency, RPM, should get together and figure out, you know, how much time is going to be needed for the review process, what data are we going to use, when the site inspection is going to occur. All of that should be done as a as part of a team effort. Again, the schedule should be developed. For federal facilities, we suggest that it may take 12 to 18 months ahead of the due date, only because of some possibly some funding issues and some contractor issues. So again, really trying to plan ahead. Through this planning process, again, you're ensuring that the 5 years are completed for the required OUs. So again, that discussion should occur as far as what OUs are we going to be assessing in the five-year review. And that should be an agreed upon decision by all the members of the planning team. And, you know, and again, OUs without a remedy or other activities that are included in the report do not need a protecting statement. And OUs with remedy, but which have not initiated the remedial action, also do not need to be included in the report. So again, all of those things should be, again, agreed to by the planning team. And for more information on this, again, please go to the OSRA 2001 Comprehensive Five-Year Review Guidance.
Monica, very quickly, before you go any further, there was a quick clarification question. Some of the attendees have asked you to define the acronym OU.
Okay. OU is, the definition of OU is operable unit. OU is operable unit. It's actually on a Superfund site. It can be a specific area. It can be a specific media, depending on, you know, that particular site. But it's OU is operable unit. Okay. So the next slide talks about, again, OU evaluation triggers. And we put this slide in here. Really, it really just shows that not all OUs need to be evaluated during the five-year review process. And the thing about it is generally a decision document should be in place and a remedial action should be initiated within an OU that leaves waste in place, and that OU should be discussed in the five-year review. So if the OU has no decision document, that is a ROD, an action memo, or something equivalent on the record side, then a remedy has not been selected and evaluation is not required. If a remedial action start has not occurred at an MPL site, requiring a statutory review, a review is not required. If the criteria for review have been met anywhere in the particular OU, then that evaluation should take place in a protecting statement issue. That is, if an OU is broken up into, for example, into different media, and one media has already been discussed in the previous five-year review, then that should be discussed in the next five-year review. And then where there are OU sub-areas that are suitable for what we call UUUE, which is unlimited use and unlimited exposure, they can be carved out of the evaluation. And again, UUUE means the selected remedy will place no restrictions on the potential use of the land or other natural resources. One of the things that we're saying here in this table is the first five-year review report after the OU meets UUUE conditions should include an evaluation that supports the UUUE and includes a protective statement for that OU. That report should state that if this is the last time that OU will be evaluated in this five-year review. There's also, and again, what we're talking about here is statutory reviews. There's also two other types of reviews, policy review and discretionary reviews. And one of the things, discretionary reviews or discretionary evaluations can be performed at OUs where they're not required by a CERCLA statute or policy. They're performed at the discretion of the lead federal agency. And for an example, where five-year review is required under a record corrective action of no further action and no further remedial action plan, this really doesn't mean UUUE. OUs, and one of the things that we also talk about is that OUs that are deleted from the MPL will still need to be evaluated within the five-year review if they have not reached UUUE. So again, this table as a reference to determine when you would, when an OU would be evaluated in a five-year review. So the next two slides talks about the common EPA, pretty much EPA comments on federal facilities 5-year reviews. And these are based on some of, based on our experience, not only at headquarters, but at some of our federal facilities, regional RPMs. And so here's basically some of our common comments related to. First one is, one of the things is that there should be one protective statement for every OU evaluated during the review process. So, in you know, some cases I've seen reports where there's several protective statements for one OU. No, there should be one protective statement for every OU. That's a comment. Second comment is a protective statement is not needed if a certain criteria met, and we just talked about that, where OU, where the remedial action hasn't begun, that is, there's no RA, there's no record of decision, or an OU has reached UUUE, and this is the last five-year review for that OU, and it remains UUUE. So that's another common comment that we have, is that sometimes we find protective statements being addressed where there's no ROD or no remedial action. Third comment is that third thing is that OUs are still under construction need a protective statement in the statutory review, and generally those OUs that are still under construction, the protective statement will be protected, should be the protective statement for those OUs that are still under construction. Other comments we've had is related to choosing the wrong protectiveness per OU. Again, we would remind folks to take a look at the 2001 guidance and also the 2012 OSWA memorandum that talks about the conditions of different protectiveness statements. And again, there are five protectiveness statements, and we'll talk a little bit about those later. Other comments. One is that when a site achieves construction completion, a site-wide protective statement is issued. And that site-wide protective statement, determination is required and will generally be the same protectiveness determination as the least protective OU at the site. Okay, so if your site has reached construction completion, you should be doing a site-wide protective statement. Other comments that we've had. The sixth is the report should stay focused on the protectiveness message. We should be distilling the message from O&M reports, long-term monitoring reports, so we should be synthesizing that information. We shouldn't be repeating it in the report. We should focus on the protectiveness message. Seventh, is the report needs to provide adequate rationale for the protectiveness statement. For remedial action should address one or more remedial action objectives, and a technical evaluation should provide evidence that the remedial action is functioning as intended and meeting the REOs or remedial action objectives. Again, the technical evaluation must address the REOs or the risk basis of the ROD. Another is comment that we will have is progress since the last 5-year review should include adequate information about the status of issues being tracked since the last 5-year review. And there are some choices in our SIMS database that talks about how you should address some of the actions since the last 5-year review. And the other comment that we have is that one of the things on the federal facility side is that we are tracking, as I mentioned before, we track your issues and recommendations. And we're actually only tracking in those issues and recommendations that affect current or future protectiveness. Sometimes when we're reviewing these reports, we see issues and issues that don't affect current or future protectiveness. It's good to those in the report, but again, we are going to only track those that affect current and future protectiveness. And again, these are sort of some of the comments that we have on the EPA side. And it's good to kind of keep these comments in mind as you think about writing your report, and this is particularly for the other federal agency, as you're writing the report and also as you're streamlining your report, that will make it easier to read and review. And particularly also as far as the message that you want to present in your report that would also be shared with the public. Next slide. I am on slide 12. Slide 16. All right, so what I want to talk to you about is the role and responsibilities of headquarters for federal facility sites, for those sites that are on our national priority list or NPL. So I mentioned to you again about the IG report, the 2011 policy memo. There was also a memo that was written in May of 2007 that also talked about program priorities. And this was a joint memo with federal facilities and private Superfund sites. And really, in the basis of this memo, the reason why this memo was written was also because of a EPA IG report on five-year reviews. And that memo pretty much talks about our program priority, talks about that in order to improve the quality and consistency of the five-year review reports, headquarters will review at least 75% of the draft reports. That's on the private side and the federal facility side. We also talked in that memo about continued training on five-year reviews, which, again, this is an example. We've had lots of training on five-year reviews and also through not only federal facilities RPM training, but also through this academy. And the third point that this memo talked about was follow-up with regions, again, on the implementations of the issues and recommendations identified in the report. And, again, important to emphasize for federal facilities sites that we are only tracking those issues and recommendations that deal with current and future protectiveness. In May of 2018, my office, the Federal Facilities Restoration and Reuse Office, we also issued a memorandum, again, to our regional folks, and this was in reference to the support for our annual report to Congress. As I mentioned before, each year, EPA, on the federal facility side and the private side, we issue an annual report to Congress. And that in that annual report to Congress, we identified those sites where EPA actually made an independent assessment of the protectiveness. We identify the sites where we identify the sites where the five-year reviews were completed, and those ones that were completed where we had to make an independent assessment of the protectiveness. We also, in that May 2018 memo, we actually require our regions to send us the draft concurrence letters to HQ for review, and we have a two-day time period where we review those letters. And again, our purpose to review those letters is just to ensure national consistency. We're reporting the protectiveness of each site. And one of the things we're also doing is we're following up with a region where a site has been identified as not protective. And that not protective determination can be made by the other federal agency or can be made by EPA through an independent finding of the protectiveness. So, and again, that memo is on our website if you'd like to take a look at it. And I think there's a link in your slides. Next slide. Next slide talks about what we call our FIFRO review process. And it's really recently we've been, as EPA has been going through what we call ELMS, which is the EPA Lean Management Process. And one of the activities that we looked at is our internal review of our five-year reviews. As I mentioned to you before, EPA headquarters reviews at least 75% of the federal facility draft five-year review reports. So we looked at that process of how we go through that review process, and we took that process and did a visual board and developed some recommendations on how we could actually make the process better. And one of the things we've done is that we've actually, as far as headquarters is concerned, we've actually reduced our review time. That is, that FIFRO strives to complete our internal review of draft documents within 30 calendar days. We also have a multiple of our FIFRO, what we call subject matter experts, to help review the documents. We've developed some consistent comments to the RPMs. We've worked on processes to discuss and resolve comments before RPM sends the comments to the other federal agency. So again, this idea of this lean management process of our internal review process has helped us to not only streamline our review, but also develop some national consistency on specific areas that we've seen that have existed and that we've actually tried to communicate those issues to our RPMs. Next slide talks about, again, our role at headquarters, again, is promoting national consistency. And we are looking at the five-year review as a means of promoting that national consistency, developing recommendations that are rooted in guidance, are feasible to implement, and also to represent best practices. We've done a systematic approach to our internal review. We've developed what we call our standard operating procedures and review template for our headquarters review. And as we go through this process, we're also actually analyzing the results of our reviews to identify trends, gaps, and refine best practices and finalize recommendations. Again, this is part of our FIFRO's internal review of the five-year reviews. Next slide gives you an indication of sort of where our comments to our RPMs are, where the bulk of our comments are coming from. And this is based on the reviews that we've done, again, internally within EPA headquarters on the 2019 and FY 2020 five-year reviews. And what we're seeing is, we've been writing several comments on related to PFAS and emerging contaminants. Some of our comments are related to protectiveness statements, issues and recommendations, identifying those issues, having specific dates of when those issues are going to be implemented and who's responsible for doing that. This is kind of a chart that tells you where most of our comments are related to. We've had some comments on community involvement and also land use controls. And our goal from this information, again, is to provide guidance to our regions on how to address those specific areas. For example, how do you address, emerging contaminants in the five-year review, although the guidance, the 2001 guidance talks about it, we're providing some best management practices to our RPMs on related to that. Next slide. Slide 20. We wanted to also talk a little bit about the state role and responsibilities under five-year reviews. And just want to make sure folks are aware that the OSWAMO has put out a state involvement in five-year reviews of federal facilities site and final report that was dated July 2018. I know we had an opportunity to review the draft reports, and provide comments. I think it's a really good report, and it also talks about state concerns and state roles at five-year reviews for federal facilities, and it really talks about what states should be doing at MPL sites and non-MPL federal facility sites. And again, for MPL facilities, states should work through their EPA, through their EPA regional office, and again, under the federal facilities agreement to resolve issues and concerns. And again, for non-MPL federal facilities, states should look at seeking informal resolution. And however, if that fails, states may seek dispute resolution through the SMOAC agreement or the Defense State Memorandum Agreement. Again, this was a recent report that was written by SWAMO, and it has lots of good information regarding state role and responsibility. So, again, I want to, that's pretty much what I have to say today, and I want to turn it over back to Emmy to talk about community involvement in five-year reviews, which is really an important topic. Emmy?
Thank you so much, Monica. Jean, if you could help me out with getting to slide 21, that's where we start our community involvement in federal facility five-year review section, and we'll go right into slide 22 by starting with a video that's available on our federal facilities five-year review website. It is geared toward members of the public to be informative for them on how to participate in five-year reviews at federal facilities. So, Jean, if you could get us set up to see that video. It's about 4 minutes long, and then we'll discuss it a bit.
Absolutely. And I'll just remind our participants that the audio for the video is going to play back online, but the video is fully captioned, so you'll be able to read the words on the screen. I've also sent a link out to everyone so you can access it locally should you have any problems with the playback here.
The United States government operates thousands of facilities to promote the security and welfare of American citizens. Facilities like military bases and weapons plants handle hazardous materials. Laws require the government to address these hazards to make sure these materials don't endanger human health or the environment. Sometimes the government can clean up contaminants entirely. In other cases, the government leaves contaminants in place but finds solutions to protect the public from any hazards. Congress has mandated that these federal sites must be reviewed every 5 years to ensure the remedies are working properly. The five-year review documents ongoing monitoring and maintenance activities and evaluates whether on-site contaminants pose a health risk. This site used to hold hazardous waste from nearby Andrews Air Force Base. Today, workers are testing groundwater for contamination left behind.
The five-year review is a way to step back out of all the details that occur at a hazardous waste cleanup site and really assess whether the remedy that we've installed is effective at protecting human health and the environment.
To conduct a five-year review, Connolly first assesses the different hazards and remedies on the site. He analyzes the levels of contaminants. He may conduct a site inspection and interview community members or site workers. He then compiles all this information into the five-year review report.
The five-year review identifies the environmental problem, the decisions that have been made to correct it, and assesses whether or not the remedy is effective.
Preparing the report is the responsibility of each facility's owner, like the Department of Defense or Department of Energy. Representatives from the Environmental Protection Agency and state or tribal authorities review the report to provide input and ensure checks and balances in the review process.
The EPA representative looks at the five-year review and either confirms the lead agency's findings or can issue an independent assessment and a set of findings.
Lenny Siegel runs a nonprofit that promotes public involvement in federal facilities.
Community members have an important role to play at contamination sites for two real reasons. One is they're the people who are impacted. They drink the water, they breathe the air, they use the land. It affects their health, their property values. Secondly, they're the people who've been there all along and are going to be there in the future. They know more about these sites often than the regulators and responsible parties.
Public notices alert community members when a five-year review is getting underway and when the report is released. In some cases, site managers request interviews with community members.
You can't wait until after the whole thing's done to give your opinion. You've got to be there when the people from the government are there to ask questions.
I think it should be an ongoing dialogue because this is a long-term process from what I understand. And, you know, we've had Andrew representatives at our association meetings two or three times already. We plan to have them again. The members want to know. They want to know what's took place and how successful actually it's been.
When the report is released, site managers may hold public meetings to explain the report's findings.
Community members not only need to give input to the process, but they need to know the results. In my community, a five-year review actually led to new cleanup questions and new cleanup technologies. And if you don't know what the review has found, you don't know what's going to come next.
To find out what's next at a site near you, contact your site's project manager. For more information about five-year reviews, visit the EPA Five-Year Review website.
Okay, so we're just wrapping up that video. And Emmy, I'm going to return us back to the presentation on slide 22.
Perfect. Thank you, Jean. So hopefully you found that video interesting. It was going over the five-year review at Andrews Air Force Base. And there's a couple of things I want to highlight. So it really spoke to the role of the community in the five-year review and suggested things like doing a public notice when the five-year review is beginning, considering the use of community interviews with people who might be more familiar with the site. I know for federal facilities that can not always click for people. You're like, oh, well, it's a base or it's this federal facility. How is the public going to be able to help? But it is good to consider those as a tool that could be used as part of your five-year review process. And also the follow-up, all this work and effort. I mean, sincerely, a lot of resources go into getting these five-year reviews done. But if you're not sharing the results with the public, it's almost a lost opportunity to get the word out about what's happening at the site. So let's go ahead and go to our next slide, slide 23, and this is just looking at in more detail what community involvement can be done around a five-year review. And Jean, if you would click us there, I'd appreciate it. So when it comes to community involvement, keep in mind that there are no required community involvement activities associated with the five-year review mandated by CERCLA or discussed in the NCP. EPA does have the 2001 guidance, which we've mentioned numerous times, which is a great resource for trying to do a very well-executed five-year review. So some suggestions that the 2001 guidance recommends is before you start that five-year review, inform the community that it's happening. Usually your site team is probably getting together 12 to 18 months before that five-year review is due. So, you know, a couple of months before you're anticipating being complete with that effort, you can inform the community that this five-year review process is beginning, you're collecting information and reviewing materials, and you could notify potentially interested parties, be it local government or other city officials that perhaps have an interest in the site. Give them that heads up that this is happening. Put a notice in the paper or send out a message on your email listserv or on the webpage for the facility. Those are all ways to get the word out that that's happening. And then as I mentioned, after the five-year review is complete, you can inform the community and all those other interested parties that the five-year review was conducted, and you can also share the results. I'll go into that a little bit more on the next slide. So again, there is, I don't want to call it a rumor, but I know a lot of EPA RPMs at least think, oh, you have to put a notice in the newspaper that you're starting your five-year review or that you've completed your five-year review. That actually is not accurate. There are no mandated activities that have to be conducted, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it because it is actually going to be really helpful to get the word out. Can you put a notice in the newspaper? Would an email listserv make more sense? Is there some other place the community gathers, a library or community recreational facilities where you could post notices about the five-year review happening. So do what's most appropriate for the community affected by the site as far as getting the word out. Perhaps you have a community citizens advisory board or something like that at the site. Going to their meetings and presenting to them on the process that's beginning and its results when it's finally complete are all good ways to share what's happening at the site. We also have a link on this slide to the 2016 Community Involvement Toolkit. Section 10 specifically covers five-year reviews, so that's a great resource if you're looking for more information on how to do community involvement better. So let's go ahead and go to the next slide, slide 24, and talk about how you get the word out for your community involvement. One way is to consider working with the site community involvement team for a communication strategy. If community interviews are going to be done, that takes some prep time. So you want to be able to get that plan together so it's not an ad hoc kind of approach. If those local government officials are interested, or maybe you need their cooperation to help with checking on things like institutional controls, you're going to want to reach out to them early. And usually the EPA, RPM, if there isn't an EPA community involvement coordinator or CIC assigned to a federal facility, it falls to the EPA, RPM to ensure that the appropriate community involvement is being done for the site. And so just keep that in mind. As far as communicating the results, you could do that through using a brief summary of the results in a fact sheet, or you could make sure that the report is posted on a website that's publicly accessible and or put in the information repository for your site. There's a lot of different ways to get the word out. One thing you want to clarify, though, when you're reaching out to
Hi, Emmy, this is Jean. I'm just confirming that you didn't accidentally hit the mute button on your phone. So I can see Emmy is still with us on the phone, but I believe you may have accidentally muted your line. And so we'll wait here just a moment to confirm that we'll get Emmy back on. Emmy, if it's a headset, you might need to unplug it and plug it back in. And for those attendees, we do monitor audio. I can hear the online stream right now. If you can also hear my voice online, feel free to send in a quick confirmation message. And thanks to those of you that you can hear us. So, Emmy, for whatever reason, your phone has disconnected. So go ahead and disconnect and call back on in. I do apologize for this brief disruption, but we should have Emmy back on the phones here in just a moment. And I want to thank everybody who's typing in, confirming that you can hear me just fine. Very much appreciated. And so hopefully we'll get Emmy back on the line, and we'll carry on with the presentation. For those of you who have been sending in questions and comments, we do appreciate that. We will pause soon with our instructors to take a Q&A break. I will just let the audience know we have a very, very large crowd with us today. We have over 430 people on live today. So we will try to get through as many questions as we can. We do appreciate your patience. Our instructors are trying to get through as much material as they can before we take a Q&A break. And it looks like Emmy's calling back in now. So we should have Emmy off of mute and on the phones here in just a moment. Okay, and so Emmy, you should be able to
Jean.
There we go. You are back
up. Sorry. Yeah, sorry. Had to call back in. Apologize so much to that, everybody. So I was just finishing up about community involvement and using a fact sheet or other ways to summarize the results and get it out into the public space so they can be aware. But we can go ahead and jump to slide 25. That just shows an example of a five-year review template that could be used. That's available on the Federal Facilities Five-Year Review website if you'd like to use something like this for your site. So I'll leave you with that, and we're actually ready to go into our next section on protectiveness statements. So Jen, are you ready to take that on?
Yep, this is Jen. I'm back. Protecting the statements. So we're going to start with how you should be thinking about your remedy as you're assessing protectiveness to get to a protectiveness determination. So the most important thing you want to go back to is think about your remedial action objectives as they were defined in the record of decision. And then as you go through your technical assessment, you're going to look for information that's going to inform you about whether you are achieving your remedial action objectives or whether you will achieve the remedial action objective. And then ultimately, you'll get to a protectiveness statement. I'm going to go into more details, so I'm not stopping there. So the next slide, this is why remedial action objectives are important when we're trying to determine protectiveness. So they're telling us what we were really trying to do with the remedy that was selected. They're identifying the risk drivers, the media, whether, you know, soil, groundwater, air, other medias. They're telling us something about contaminants of concern. They're telling us about exposure pathways. Is it a direct contact to soil exposure that we're protecting for? Is it a ingestion of groundwater? And they're also telling us receptors. So is it human health we're protecting? Is it an eco risk we're cleaning up for? Is it, okay, and then the next one, we're getting into kind of current and future land use. So that's also going to tell us, you know, when we selected our remedy, were we trying to make the land protective for residential use or some other, you know, industrial, commercial, agriculture, you know, some other type of use? And then it puts those things all together with the purpose of the action. Are we trying to prevent exposures? Are we trying to minimize migration? Are we trying to eliminate exposures, or are we trying to restore an aquifer? So those are just some examples, but in your remedial action objectives, you should kind of see all of those types of, you know, risk drivers, what the land use is, and what the purpose of the action is. That's going to help us when we're looking at our five-year review and trying to do a technical assessment to make protectiveness determinations. So as you're looking through each of these questions, you're thinking about your REO. So is the remedy working? Is the remedy functioning as intended? Well, in order to know that, we need to know what the goal of the remedy was, and that is what the REO was telling us. Were we trying to prevent migration of a groundwater plume? So if that is our REO, then we need to know if that's happening to determine whether our remedy is working or not. Our exposure assumption is still valid. So our REOs also contain, you know, information about what exposure pathways we're trying to, you know, prevent based on the decision document. And then is there anything else to consider? Again, is you're thinking about, you know, what did we go out there to do, and is there anything else that we need to think about to confirm protectiveness? So those are going to be really important, and we're going to look at our records of decision or record of decision amendments to find those REOs and help us assess protectiveness in our five-year review. Okay, so the 2001 guidance on five-year reviews, the comprehensive five-year review guidance that Monica had referenced earlier and Emmy referenced again, lays out the different protectiveness determinations that are available for use in five-year reviews. So we have protective, which, you know, hopefully means everything is functioning as intended. Everything is protective based on our, you know, previous assumptions in the record of decision, and there's nothing else that could call into question protectiveness. We have will be protective once the remedy is completed. I think during Monica's section, she talked about remedies being under construction, and that goes to CERCLA and the NCP both talk about 5-year reviews being required based on the initiation of a remedial action. So a remedial action could be initiated, and that will start your countdown for your first 5-year review. And if it is not completed by the time that 5-year review comes around, that remedy is still under construction, and you may find that it will be protective based upon the situation. That would be a situation where, you know, everything you've done to date has worked how you expected. So you expect if you, you know, continue to do it and complete the construction, that it will be protective once it's completed. Protective in the short term. However, in order for the remedy protective in the long term, follow-up actions are needed. So that one is based upon the fact that we have information available that tells us that there are no exposure pathways allowing unacceptable exposures to occur, but there may be some long-term issues with our remedy that we need to address to ensure that it remains protective in the future. So that could be, I guess I'll do a groundwater. We know there's no one drinking the groundwater, so there's no exposures, but we are not seeing, you know, progress towards REOs as quickly as we expected based on the record of decision. And maybe you need to do additional, you know, monitoring or, you know, collect additional information to determine if we're going to achieve those REOs. So the next one the next protectiveness that is in the guidance is protectiveness deferred. So that would be where we don't have enough information currently about whether there are unacceptable exposures occurring or not. And that could be unacceptable exposures for human health or for the environment, depending, again, on going back to our record of decision in our REOs and what it was we needed to achieve. So in that situation, we need further information to be obtained to determine whether there are unacceptable exposures occurring. And we're going to, you know, as we talked about before with identifying follow-up actions and recommendations, we're going to identify actions that need to be taken to gather that information within a specified time frame so that we can actually make a protectiveness determination. Protectiveness deferred, while it is, you know, a determination we can make, it is also identifying data gaps that we need to fill in. So it is important to identify that time frame and identify, you know, what those actions are that are needed to be taken to gather further information. And then the fifth 5-year review determination discussed in the guidance is not protective, and that would be where we have an actual unacceptable exposure occurring. Again, human health or eco, depending on what our REOs are and what our remedy is supposed to do. And that not protective determination should identify what actions are needed to achieve protectiveness. Say there is a vapor intrusion mitigation systems that were installed, but they've been, you know, not been operated properly or they were turned off. It may identify we need to turn those back on if there's an actual exposure that's posing unacceptable risk. Okay, so I think we have a poll now to get some input from folks on their experiences. So you should see the poll available to you. So the question is, have you worked on a federal facility 5-year review where the determination was protectiveness deferred? And if you have, what was the cause for making that determination? So there's a couple common ones identified, and then there's an option to include other and then identify what that was if you would like.
Yeah,
And as we're letting some of these responses come in, for those of you who might be on a mobile device, if you're unable to respond to those polls, you can always share your responses in the Q&A. Remember, this is just an opportunity for you to share and share your experiences. This is not part of a graded activity, so we welcome your participation, but this is not something that's mandatory. Remember, when you're selecting your answers, you can simply click the circle to the left of the answer that you agree with, or as many of you are doing now, if you find that you've had all of those or multiple situations happen, you can enter those into the box to the side. And Jen, as I'm looking through some of this, it looks like almost half of the audience has been faced with that third option where emerging contaminants needed to be investigated. And then about a quarter of them have dealt with sampling needed to confirm exposure pathways, and the other quarter have been in other, where it looks like it was multiple of these situations.
Yep, not surprised by that. And then also for all the folks that had A, B, and C, I am also not surprised by that, because depending on, you know, how many five-year views or how many sites you're actually working on, you could have either one of these at one site or one of these at, you know, different sites. So, great.
Okay. All right. So I think, thank you, Jen. I think we're ready to go on now to our next slide. And what you should be seeing is a flow diagram to help you in choosing a protectedness determination. So this is our, well, an attempt that an RPM had put together trying to better understand, well, how do I know what is the correct protectedness statement for my site. So the chart is based on information from the 2001 five-year review guidance. And we start in the blue box with this trigger. Is the trigger met? So here, you're looking at questions like, well, do you have a record of decision for that operable unit or set of operable units? Yes? Okay. Has the remedial action been constructed or is it being constructed? And then also another question you could look at, is this operable unit at UUUE? Again, that's unlimited use, unlimited exposure, essentially saying that there's no need for any kind of controls because exposures are not an issue when that OU has reached UUUE. So if the trigger is met, then you look at the REOs. Jen talked to us about that. And you go into your technical assessment questions. From your technical assessment questions, you'll first consider, is the remedy under construction? Is the remedial action under construction? If so, you want to look and see if you have enough information to be able to determine protectiveness. So if you answer yes, then you come to this box where you say, okay, the remedy is on track, and there are interim protections in place. So while you have construction going on, is access controlled? Are, you know, any other types of potential exposures have some type of institutional or administrative control on them so exposures aren't happening? If so, then you can say this remedy will be protective because it's still being constructive. But say you can't answer that question. You don't know if you have enough information. So you answer no, there's not enough information. So it might make more sense to go to protectiveness deferred and identify what information is needed. And that would go into an addendum. Then hopefully based on that addendum and the information it contains, you can determine what the right protectiveness statement is. Say you're under construction and your remedy is being constructed, it's on track, but you don't have all the appropriate protections in place. Maybe there is some potential exposure pathway that still exists and hasn't been cut off. Then you would say, well, that is not protective because those exposures could potentially happen. Coming back up to the beginning of the flowchart, if you are doing your technical assessment and say you're past that, remember, the record of decision isn't the trigger for the date of the five-year review. It's when the remedial action construction begins. Once 5 years from that date is when you're looking for doing your first five-year review. So it may very well still be under construction at that time. or you could already be in having the remedy operating or be completed if it's something like a dig and haul scenario where you've removed soil and you're done with the action. So again, do you have enough information? If not, then that might require an addendum. If you do have enough information, you want to know if exposures are happening. If exposures are happening, well, then it's not protective, right? But if exposures are not happening, then you look to see, are the remedies working to meet the REOs in the long term? So if it is going to meet the REOs in the long term, then you can say, yep, we're protective. But say short term, all your exposures are, your exposure pathways are controlled, but there's some long-term concerns, maybe with a slowly moving plume or some other conditions that are specific to the site where you could say, we're okay now in the short term, but long term, there's some other actions that need to be taken. So hopefully this flowchart helped you better understand how to select the appropriate protective determination that Jen just walked us through. We're going to go ahead and go to the next slide, which is to apply your understanding. So here's an example. We're looking at operable unit one is preparing for its second five-year review. The ROD was issued in 2005. So the cleanup level for the primary COC became more stringent in 2012. So based on the existing data, the COC concentrations exceeded the cleanup level because it wasn't as stringent before. So since the REOs were met, no sampling has taken place, and the institutional controls are no longer in place. So it's not known if the groundwater is being used, but the other federal agency, as you know, for a federal facility, the lead agency for cleanup is not EPA, it's the other federal agency, and they have concluded that the remedy is still protective. So what protectiveness determination should EPA assign this OU? And you should be seeing your options pop up. Is it A, B, C, or D? We'll give you a few seconds to choose your answer. Looks like people are still. Go ahead, Jean.
Oh, no, just reminding them, if they want, they could just type an answer into that Q&A window if they prefer, and that's easier. But I am seeing them come in. Now, right now, this is a quiz, so you can't see how other people are voting. But we can see the distribution here. And in a few seconds, we'll sort of lock the poll down, and we'll show you how the rest of the class is voting so you can see if you are all agreeing or not. So I am doing my slow countdown in my head, playing my amazing Jeopardy theme music, and waiting for a few more people to squeeze an answer in. And then, Emmy, I think maybe now we might just go ahead and take a look at what the right answer is.
Sure. Let's look. Let's see. So based on their responses, it looks like the majority of people selected C, protectiveness deferred. So if you selected C, that is the answer we were looking for. If the remedy can meet a new cleanup level and the previous level is outside of the risk range, then how likely is it that the remedy is still protective? So you, in your five-year review, you would need a follow-up action to be recommended, and it could say something like, look at the cleanup level based on the new standard that's been adopted, and if necessary, modify the remedy. So that recommendation would be part of your five-year review. And remember, those issues and recommendations for action are something that EPA tracks. We track that in our database, referred to as SEMS, and each of those recommendations and actions are tracked, and so to make sure that they're being followed up on. That's how EPA ensures that protectiveness is being addressed at these sites, especially as we get further and further away from the record of decision and the construction of that remedial action, wanting to make sure that we're still having protective remedies in place. So EPA definitely tracks that and follows up on it to make sure that come the next five-year review, action has been taken on all of those recommendations. All right, so let's go ahead and continue now to our next slide.
Okay, this is Jen. And I believe I'm back. Oh, sorry, I advanced too far. Okay. So What are some items that a reviewer would be looking for in a protectiveness statement? So, you know, one of the things we're looking for is one protectiveness statement per OU. So if your site has more than one OU, which most of them do in the federal facility world, each OU that has met the trigger has a ROD, has initiated remedial action, should include a protectiveness statement. The correct protectiveness determination is made. So that means that, you know, based on the information that you've presented in the document and through your technical assessment, you've made the protectiveness determination that lines up with that information. And that is kind of in the next. We're looking for adequate support in the technical evaluation. So, you know, we don't want to see a five-year review that says it's protective, but your technical assessment raises lots of questions about protectiveness or lots of issues that may need to be dealt with. Consistency with issues and recommendations tables. So we want to make sure that those are consistently reported and are also consistent with what has been identified in the body of the five-year review document. You want to see discussion of progress towards meeting RAOs. We're looking for the standard format followed for protectiveness statements. There is an EPA guidance 2012 clarification of protectiveness statements memorandum that talks about the standard format for writing protectiveness statements. And then if a site-wide protectiveness statement is needed, back to Monica discussed this, if the site has achieved construction completion, it should include a site-wide protectiveness statement. So we're looking to see if that's in there, if it's required. This is just a little, you know, helping you think about a protectiveness statement. So this is specifically for a short-term protectiveness determination. So we are identifying the operable unit and the protectiveness. That is in the black in the beginning, the remedy at OUI currently protects human health and the environment. We are identifying, you know, what activities justify that determination because land use controls prevent groundwater use are in place and groundwater treatment will continue until concentrations throughout the plume are below the standard. And then if it is something other than fully protective, so short-term protective, when I talked about that before, we sometimes identify things that impact long-term protectiveness. This part in red here identifies what actions we need to take in order to ensure protectiveness. So here we have, to be protective in the long term, the ISC boundary should be expanded. Okay, so just a little bit about remedies considered not protective. So we want to remember it's about the exposure. So an immediate threat is present. Exposure pathways that could result in unacceptable risks are not being controlled. Migration of contaminants is uncontrolled and is posing an unacceptable risk to human health or the environment. And the potential or actual exposure is clearly present or there's evidence of exposure. ICs are not in place or not enforced and exposure is occurring. So we know someone is using, you know, the whatever the media is being used in a way that is resulting in unacceptable risks. And then the other one, the remedy cannot meet a new cleanup level and the previous cleanup level is outside the risk range. So this, again, may depend on site-specific considerations. So you need to know kind of your what your remedy is and what things you have to prevent exposures. And if there are uncontrolled exposure pathways resulting in unacceptable risks, this could also be a not protective situation. Okay, so follow-up actions based on a five-year review. So if the remedy is not protective in the short term or protectiveness deferred, recommendations to address protectiveness should be identified. So we've discussed, when we've talked about protectiveness and the technical assessment, that we may identify things that are either impacting current protectiveness, so if there are uncontrolled exposure pathways currently, or future protectiveness, or we have a need for additional information to have an understanding of what the exposure pathways, whether they're uncontrolled or not, are. So there should be issues and recommendations identified in the five-year review that will help you either address that uncontrolled exposure, address that long-term issue, or gather the necessary information to make a protectiveness determination. And again, so if the five-year review determines the remedy is not performing as designed, changes to the selected remedy may be needed through an ESD or ROD amendment. The remedy selection happens in the decision document, the record of decision, the record of decision amendment, or the explanation of significant differences. And if there is a problem with the remedy, it may be identified that changes are needed. Okay, so there were some questions about following up on issues and recommendations identified in five-year review. So at EPA, we have a system called the Superfund Enterprise Management System, SEM for short, which is where we track all of our data. There is a module in it for five-year reviews, and we input each issue and recommendation that's identified in a five-year review into that data system. The EPA Remedial Project Manager is responsible for ensuring that they keep the status of those recommendations up to date between five-year reviews. Here are some of the statuses that are available for them to select. And from headquarters, we do, you know, notify the regions a couple times a year to check in on their recommendations and make sure they're keeping them up to date. And then I think I'm passing it off for a case study.
Hi, everyone. My name is Laura Bulow, and I am an RPM out in Region 10. I am permanently based out in Richland, Washington, at our Hanford Project Office, and I've been out here for about 13 years now. I predominantly work on the Hanford site, but I'm actually not going to talk about that site today. I'm going to talk about one of the other federal facilities I have, which is Mountain Home Air Force Base. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about the history of the base or anything, but it is in outside of Boise, Idaho, in Mountain Home. It is a Air Force site that I've had for a couple years now. I took it over about 2.5 years ago as the project manager. I will just say that Mountain Home, although Central Idaho is beautiful and full of mountains, they named the base Mountain Home Air Force Base to try to encourage people to come there, and you can't really see a whole lot of mountains. It's high desert in the area. So I was asked to give kind of an RPM perspective of going through a federal facility five-year review. So the process that I've done, and we're ramping up our, well, another five-year review for Mountain Home coming up next year. So basically encouraging the federal facility to use the EPA five-year review template. It makes it easier on everybody. It's a little more streamlined now than it has been. It really helps if, for me to review it and then to get it through headquarters review. I also recommend meeting to talk about the main parts of it, which a lot of times are those protectiveness statements and the issues and recommendations. If we could talk through those, that helps a lot before, you know, I just get that first or draft landing on my desk. I will then oftentimes take a look at it as long as we're not really crunched up on a deadline. But the best path is to, yeah, get a chance to look at it before I just send it off. So I don't just blindly send it to Monica at headquarters and say, hey, you know, go ahead and review this. I'll take a look at it. And if it seems fairly straightforward, then I'll send her an email and say, you know, we're in fairly good agreement, no major concerns here, but what do you think? And give her the minimum of 30 days to review. But if I'm unsure about things, and I've done this on some of my private sites with Jen Edwards, also that, you know, I just pick up the phone and set up a time to talk with Monica, your federal facility counterpart, of, you know, I'm not really sure if this is protective deferred or short-term protective, and we just talk through it. So I highly encourage other RPMs or the other agencies to talk with the EPA RPMs about those before you get so entrenched in your position that it's, you know, harder to change. So for Mountain Home, I took this site on, and the five-year review was overdue, and the Air Force had some delays in getting the five-year review out. We were at the second draft of it. We did not have time to get another review for the Air Force to get all the wording exactly correct, but as Jen's been walking you through, the way that we write to protect them as determinations. So we had, and we generally agreed with what they did, we just didn't use the correct wording that we used. So what our letter then says is, you know, we've reviewed it, we concur with the identified issues, and then we say specifically EPA concurs with these. And this is where we launch into our correct wording. So whereas the federal facility says, you know, the remedy, there's a lot of narrative in their protect and the statements for each operable unit. So as Jen said, we specify it by operable unit one. We have several operable units that need a five-year review. And for federal facilities, we pretty much, even though they might all be a little bit staggered start, you know, we can wrap them into one five-year review. So we go by operable unit, and here we just say protective. So that's the first thing you see, and then just these sites are protective of human health. The second one is operable unit number three. Again, there's just a lot of narrative. It says, you know, they're like currently protecting human health. Well, that's not really one of ours. So we reiterated that it's, you know, for EPA terms, short-term protective. You know, it's currently protective. And then, as Jen was saying, you need to give that, however, in order for the remedy protective in the long term, here is what has to happen. So rephrasing it in our terms. Operable unit number four was actually a protectiveness deferred one because this was an emerging contaminant issue for fluorinated compounds. So we say what deferred, we say what information we need, and then we say what date we expect it to come in by. And then because we had a protectiveness deferred, we have an issue and recommendation. Ours is just a little bit more active. It was just titled under the protectiveness deferred for OU4, and then we say we have to collect additional soil samples and when that is expected to be done. And then this is what gets tracked. So from this letter, that is what then gets put into our system as far as what is tracked. So these different protectiveness determinations for each operable unit. And then the ending, you know, a nice thank you, and then the deadline for the next five-year review report, which interestingly, as we were preparing for this presentation, I went, you know, we were delayed on that last one. Can we go back and recheck? And our letter says it was due in 2022, and the Air Force has been working to get me the five-year review information and went back and worked with Monica and went, nope, it's actually due in July of 2021, so we were able to update our system. Everybody is back on track. We try to get the kinks worked out of these. As was pointed out, federal facilities don't get that slip. I think originally what happened is that the last five-year review didn't get to EPA until 2017, so it had gotten entered that it would be 5 years from there, but federal facilities don't get that slip. You're a couple years late on one, you won't have a shorter time until you have to have the next one done. So it'll always stay based on that July 2021. And with that, I am going to turn it over to Monica, I believe, for the independent findings.
All right. Thanks, Laura, and absolutely right. So
So we're going to talk about independent finding. We've already talked a little bit about this, so I just want to reiterate the fact that, again, EPA's role is to either concur with the federal agency's protecting this statement or make an independent assessment of the protecting statement. And we've already talked about this. We concur on the federal agency's determination per OU, or we can issue a finding per OU. We identify the issues and recommendation and what action is being taken. And again, request a response from the federal agency and a due date for the implementation of that recommendation. We are reporting to Congress on those five-year reviews, not only that have been completed, but where EPA made an independent assessment. And then in that letter, we also give the federal agency an indication of when the next due date is for the next review. So all of that's in the concurrence letter, and all of that is in also part of the 2011 policy memo that I mentioned to you. So what causes us to do, what EPA to do independent finding? Just a few, and this is not an exhaustive list, but, you know, sometimes we don't get a report. Sometimes we don't get a report that gives us enough time to review it. Sometimes the draft report is not finalized by the date, the statutory due date, as Laura talked about. And in cases we just don't agree with the protectant's determination because of emerging contaminants or new exposure pathways or maybe land use controls. So these are some of the reasons why what causes EPA to issue an independent finding. And again, a reminder is that the regions are required to actually submit those letters to EPA headquarters for review. And this next chart just talks about the trends on issuing independent finding and protecting this. All this information is based on the actual report to Congress. And for example, in FY 2018, we completed 34 five-year reviews. 10 of them we had to do independent assessments on the independent findings, rather, on the protectiveness. And in one case, out of that 10, the EPA just did not receive a report. But again, all of this information is in the report to Congress, which is on our website. So if you want additional information, please go on the website or just get in touch with us. Next slide. So next slide is a poll, and it's a group poll. And it's like, have you worked on a federal facility five-year review where EPA and the other federal agency disagreed on a protective statement? And how was it resolved? So we're seeing the data. Oh, lots of people know. That's a good thing. So there's a lot of agreement. 27%. Yeah. All right. We'll give some people some time. Gina, I didn't know if you wanted to go through these.
Just quickly, and what I'm seeing, it looks like some people are sort of in the middle of this process right now, and then I'm seeing a number of phrases sort of agree to disagree or a compromise. Multiple right. parties have noted that when they did experience this, it was an independent EPA determination or a separate letter of determination.
Right. So again, we hope that people... One of the things that we emphasize and we hope that people will do is, again, as I talked about, is the actual teaming, working together and hopefully deciding on, early as far as what OUs are going to be evaluated. All of that should be part of the process of working together to finalize the document. And, again, it's important to have the documents finalized by the statutory date. And EPA RPMs are pretty much instructed to have those documents completed by the statutory due date. And as Laura mentioned, we're actually committed to those dates, and we commit that to Congress, and also we've committed to the IG. And I think that is it. I think I'm going to turn it over to to Emmy on emerging contaminants.
Thanks, Monica. So I believe before we jump into emerging contaminants, we want to go through some apply your understanding slides. So this is going to give people a chance to see how this plays out in the field or, at the site level. So we have a couple of polls that we'd like to go with you through. I see some people are already jumping on it for this first scenario one. So what we're asking here is, as an EPA-RPM, you received and reviewed a draft five-year review report. After reviewing the document and providing the document to FIFRO for review, you are able to concur with the protectionist statements. However, the report will not be final by the statutory due date. What are the follow-up actions for the EPA-RPM? So here, Jean, can you remind me, are people able to click on more than one answer?
So in this particular case, it is a pick one answer. So if you are debating and hemming and hawing, pick your most right answer of those. You can always share some clarifying thoughts if you think perhaps others could also work, or you think it should have been everything, or multiple choices. You can also put that into the Q&A.
Perfect. Thanks. So we'll give people just a few more seconds to pick your most right choice, and then we'll discuss.
All right, Emmy, and I'm getting people typing things in that they think they should pick everything.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay, so just in the interest of time, I think we'll go ahead and call it for this and then discuss as a group. So for scenario one, things that the EPA-RPM should do as follow-up actions include: A, write a concurrence letter agreeing with the federal agency protected determination. B, to identify issues, recommendations, and actions that will be tracked in SEMS. And C, submit the letter and draft report to SEMS. D is not a correct answer. EPA cannot wait past that statutory due date to provide their letter. Remember, those items are tracked and sent to Congress, and EPA has a responsibility to respond in a timely manner based on the statutory due dates. So EPA does not have to wait until the report is finalized, but should go ahead with those other actions. All right, we have a few of these, so I'm going to go ahead and take us to our next question on scenario two. So here, as an EPA-RPM, you received and reviewed a draft five-year report. After reviewing the document and providing it to FIFRA for review, you are able to conclude that EPA does not agree with the protectionist statements in the draft report. Also, it won't be finalized by the statutory due date. So what are your follow-up actions in this scenario?
And Emmy, for this one, I made it a multiple choice option, so you can pick all that apply. So if you think it should be all the answers, I've made it easier for everybody.
Perfect. Thank you, Jean. Wow, I see a lot of answers coming in for this. That's good. I'd like to see the participation. And hopefully these scenarios will help address some of the questions that you've typed in. We're not going to be able to address all of those individually. We have quite a number of questions that have come in, but I'm hoping this will help with understanding. Okay, it looks like we're slowing down a little bit. We're going to give you just a few more seconds more, and then we're going to broadcast the results. So for this one in scenario two, your actions are: A, to make an independent finding of the protectionist by the statutory due date, and that should be in a letter. As far as B, I see some people did select B. You may decide to share a draft letter with the federal agency, but it is not for their approval. It can be just as information sharing or trying to resolve issues before issuing that final version of the letter, but the other federal agency doesn't get to approve EPA's letter. If EPA does not agree with the protectionist statements, EPA will issue their own letter with their own independent finding of protectiveness. So keep that in mind. Letter C, yes, you should submit a letter and draft report to SEMS. And for that independent finding letter, please make sure that you send that to FIFRO in draft form for review before signature. Okay, let's go to scenario three. So in scenario three, as an EPA RPM, you received a draft five-year review report from the federal agency, but you don't have sufficient time to conduct a review. And this can happen. Say, oh, the due date's a week from now and you got this 300-page report. A week might not be enough time to review it, right? So the report won't be final by the statutory due date. What are the follow-up actions for the EPA RPM? I'll give you a few seconds to fill that out. Give everyone a couple of more seconds. I see the answers are still filing in. I'm happy with what I'm seeing so far, though. I'll share that much before we broadcast the results. All right, it looks like responses are slowing down. So I think we have one more scenario. So let's go ahead and get through this one, number three. Okay, so for this one, I think my connectivity is suffering, Gene, so I'm just going to go ahead and go into the answers. So for this scenario, you would want to A, make an independent finding, C, submit the letter and draft report to SEMS, and D, send that draft letter to FIFRO for review before finalizing it. All right, let's jump right into scenario four. This is our last little quiz for this webinar. We're rapidly going through our time together today, so definitely want to get through this last scenario with you all. Jean, is it on the screen?
Yep, we have moved on to scenario four, and we've got that multiple option or pick all that apply poll at the bottom half of the screen.
Perfect. So in this scenario, the five-year review report has been finalized by the statutory due date. In later discussions, the federal agency expresses it is not willing to implement the recommendations in the five-year review report. What are the potential follow-up actions for the EPA RPM? So we'll give, I see people are already answering those questions. We'll give you a few more seconds to put in your responses. And I think there were a number of questions about this. Like, can EPA force the other federal agency to take action if, you know, there's disagreement, or how does that work out? So we'll let people answer this question and discuss.
All right, and Emmy, I'm seeing some answers still come in, but it is looking like they are hovering around a pretty consistent set of choices.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're comfortable, I say we chat through the answers on this one.
Yes, let's do it. So for scenario four, if you chose A, there's nothing EPA can do, that would not be correct. And that we don't want you to answer A for this question. But if you selected B or C, those are actions can be taken. So EPA can send a letter to the federal agency outlining the issues and recommendations and seek a plan of action and schedule from the federal agency. Or C, if progress is not made in a reasonable time, then EPA can consider sending a letter requiring the actions as additional work under the Federal Facilities Agreement, and those can be subject to dispute resolution. So that starts to become a little more, you know, you get into that dispute framework, it becomes more formal in trying to push for those actions. If you chose D, EPA will do the actions themselves. EPA is not the lead cleanup agency at federal facilities, so EPA will not do the actions themselves. That is the responsibility of the lead agency for federal facility sites. Okay, so those were all our scenarios for today. Oh, go ahead.
No, Emmy, this is Monica, and just one thing. In one of the scenarios, we talk about this, an option of sending a letter to the federal agency. And as you mentioned, no, we don't need to send the letter to the federal agency. But I want to just emphasize to folks that you need to be communicating with the other federal agency and your state counterpart as far as what action EPA is going to take. So if you're taking an independent finding of the protective list, your federal agency counterpart should know that that's going to be done. They don't need to comment on a letter or anything like that, but they should know that, and also your state counterpart should know that. That's it.
Oh, thank you, Monica. No, that's a good point. We don't want to do these secretly behind a wall. Definitely want to be communicating with your other federal agency, your state partners, whoever else is involved in the five-year review when it looks like EPA is going to make an independent finding so that there's no surprises. And hopefully so the site team can work together to identify how to resolve those issues and address the recommendations. Okay, so we did get a couple of questions about emerging contaminants. So our last few slides will go over how FIFRO is looking at addressing emerging contaminants in federal facility five-year reviews. So Monica mentioned that we have a streamlined process in place under ELMS to look at emerging contaminants. So we have a subject matter expert who is looking at this very closely. If you look at the trends and analysis for comments, emerging contaminants for PFAS is one of the areas where FIFRA has a high number of comments coming back to the regions when we look at those draft documents. So where should PFAS be addressed in the five-year review? There should be a broad overview of how PFAS is being considered, especially in question B. That is going to be a part of the technical assessment where FIFRO is looking at where PFAS captured under question B. The existing guidance suggests that this is the most appropriate question as it addresses exposure assumptions and detection of new chemicals. So while there isn't a cleanup standard to point to, you can still look at risk, you can still look at other information to best determine how PFAS are being handled at this site. Also, based on the information that you're gathering, looking at issues and recommendations, is there any follow-on sampling included? Then that should be captured under the issues and recommendations. Is there a site-wide investigation being done? Has it been, looking more closely at areas where you know there were fire training activities or what have you, where you're likely to have an emerging contaminant such as PFAS be present? And lastly, looking at if the PFAS affects protectiveness. If there's unresolved issues, it might mean that the best determination for that operable unit or five-year review would be short-term protectiveness, or maybe there's insufficient information and an addendum would be required instead. So just know that FIFRO is looking to standardize or at least promote consistency for how PFAS are addressed in our federal facility five-year reviews. If you have additional questions and want to know who to contact for EPA RPMs, feel free to reach out to your regional coordinators. They're listed on this slide here, 59, for each region, and then there's a backup in case that person's out on vacation or just not available. And I would recommend if you're sending a five-year review to FIFRO for their review, remember we try and do those in 30 days or less, that you send it to your regional coordinator and CC Monica McKeady because she is our FIFRO five-year review coordinator and will be involved in the process for its review. Just really quickly, so you have a face to go with the name. These are our regional coordinators in FIFRO, and we are here to help. Please don't feel scared to reach out to us. We really just want to try and help RPMs do what they're doing out at the site. And now we have just a little bit of time left. I'm going to hand it back over to Jean.
All right. Thanks so very much. So, again, I'm going to go through just a few questions with our remaining time. I do apologize. We had a massive turnout today. I want to thank everybody for sharing your questions and comments, and I'll start with a few right now. This first one comes regarding those 12 580 agencies. So are the 12 580 agencies required to follow all EPA guidance in the CERCLA process? Where is this requirement found?
Monica, did you want to take that one?
So they're talking about the Executive Order 12580, and it's actually in the CERCLA, in the law that that the federal agencies must follow the EPA guidance. It's actually in the NCP is where it is.
All right. Excellent. We also had a question sort of clarifying policy and statutory reviews. One of the attendees noted, I have some agencies that choose M&A as the remedy, and then they choose a, quote, policy review, even though those may go on for decades. Is something like that a policy review or a statutory review?
Can Jen jump in on that?
Yeah.
Sure. So M&A is often chosen with an REO for restoration, where it will achieve not leave waste in place on the site. So in the 2001 five-year review guidance, that's discussed where that will achieve UUUE, unlimited use unrestricted exposure. So that would be a policy five-year review.
Okay, great. Our next question, you had sort of hit on this earlier. What happens if EPA non-concurs with the lead agency's five-year review? Can the EPA force that lead agency to take action?
Right. So it isn't so much about EPA forcing action. We do have some tools available like letters that can put our opinions to paper and communicating with the other federal agency, but it really is a team effort across the site project team to get those issues resolved. But remember, EPA does report to Congress when we issue our independent findings, and that, again, does not require approval or agreement from the other federal agency. So that goes in those annual reports to Congress. So that's good to be aware of, especially for the other stakeholders and federal agencies.
All right, and I think we can squeeze in one more question about triggers. So is an action memo for a time-critical removal action a trigger? What about a non-time-critical removal action memo?
Jen, did you want to jump on that? Or Monica?
So this is a really site-specific question, so there's not a very good way to answer it generally. The 2001 five-year review guidance discusses where policy five-year reviews may be required for removal actions taken at sites on the NPL where no remedial action has or will be taken. So it really depends on the situation at the site. Monica, is that
that's correct.
What you
that's
would say?
Correct. So it's it is very site-specific, yes.
And it doesn't differentiate between non-time critical or time critical. It just discusses removal actions. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Emmy, it does look as though we're just past our scheduled end time, but I do have a few final reminders for the audience. Are there any closing thoughts you'd like to leave with them before I switch over to those closing instructions?
Sure. I just want to thank everyone again for your time and participation today. For my EPA RPMs, if you have a question site-specific for your federal facility five-year review, please reach out to your regional coordinator and Monica McKitty. We are more than happy to help you work through any questions or challenges that you have. For those representing other federal agencies or groups, we generally ask that you work through the region to address issues, but for general questions, we are also available if you would like to direct anything our way. And that's it.
All right.
So with that, hopefully everybody can stay with me for just one more minute with a few quick final reminders before we close things out today. So first, I want to thank the over 470 people who were on live for today's broadcast, as well as our instructors and organizers who took time out of their schedules to share their resources and knowledge, and then again, all of the really great comments and questions that we received from our audience today. A number of you have asked for copies of the presentation materials, for copies of the charts. Some of you have pointed out a few typos in URLs that were in there. So we do have a copy of the presentation materials or participant manual. It is essentially a copy of the slides with some additional or supplemental notes included. That's already posted, and I will work with instructors to revise any typos in the URLs. Please know any of those typos, the text of the URL was correct on the slide. It was just the link that when you click it where it was taking you may have been missing a character. So you can always copy and paste the text or type that URL manually. It is correct in the slide content. As Emmy said, contact information for your presenters and other FIFRO staff can be found in the slide packets as well as on our seminar homepage that we put together for today's session. And for those of you who want a certificate, please be sure to fill out the online feedback form. That feedback form will allow you to do a few things, provide input on the content as well as the tool that we use to host today's session. And at the very bottom of that certificate, if you would like a certificate of participation, please be sure to enter your email address on that form correctly and check the box at the bottom. I've got a little screenshot of it here that certifies you were here for the entire live session. If you don't check that box, or again, same thing for those of you replaying the session, when you fill out the form, if you don't check that box, you won't get a certificate. But as long as you put your email address in the form and check that box, when you hit submit, you'll then immediately have access to a seminar certificate that looks something like this that you can either download or print out for your own records. And you heard me right, those of you who are replaying the recorded version, you can still click on the link to the seminar feedback page. It's on the middle right under related URLs. Simply click that link and press the Browse To button. I also pasted it right in the Q&A window for easy access as well. So for those of you who are looking for the previously recorded seminars, if you scroll further down in the related URLs, there is a link to the archived sessions in this series. You can open that up and play back the other ones that you may have missed that took place earlier in the year. So with that, again, thank you all so very much for joining us. As soon as the archive is available for today's class, you'll automatically receive an email with instructions on how to play it back, and we encourage you to share it with your colleagues. It usually takes us about 1 to 2 weeks to post those archives, and we welcome your feedback when you share it with your colleagues. So this will be the formal conclusion.